Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Glad they're talking. Yeah. What came out of it, it's still too early to tell. I mean, there's no real commitment, so, other than the commitment on our side to stop military exercises, which is troubling to me.
60% of public school children in the state of Arizona today are minorities. That complicates racial immigration because there aren't enough white kids to go around.
When you have someone that says immigration is the greatest existential threat to the United States, I fail to see how that can be taken out of context and what else he could mean by that than meaning that people of color are threatening white people.
Today is the beginning of an arduous process. Our eyes are wide open, but peace is always worth the effort, especially in this case. This should have been done years ago. This should have been resolved a long time ago.
And with us to talk about the latest with the Corporation Commission-related trial in the Valley, also comments made by State Representative David Stringer about immigration, our former legislative leader Chad Campbell, Senior Vice President at Strategies 360, and John Gabriel, Editor-in-Chief of Ricochet.com and a contributor to the Arizona Republic. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
Chad, first reaction when you heard about Representative Stringer's comments?
Disgusted, I guess, would be the best way to put it, and troubled by it. And, you know, it's bad enough that we have this happening here in Arizona, but I think the more troubling aspect of this to me is that we're seeing this all across the country now. We're seeing this type of rhetoric in campaigns at every level of government, including the White House, and that's where I think this stems from. This is a very pervasive sentiment now in American politics, mainly on the Republican side, obviously, or the Libertarian side for some of them. And I just saw a study the other day, you know, there's more openly, like, proclaimed white supremacists running for office at any time since, like, the Civil War in America, basically. So it was a troubling comment, obviously, but even more troubling is the fact that this seems to be what a lot of candidates are now trying to play to in the GOP base, and that's a bad sign for America.
John, is this as big picture as Chad is talking about?
I think it is. Speaking as a former Republican, you see the election in Virginia, too. Someone with, you know, bragging, waving around Confederate flags, winning the GOP primary. And I think the state GOP is right to just immediately condemn this and ask him to step down. I think what's even more disturbing was seeing the video of his comments and the crowd just sitting there politely eating their lunch, and then afterwards, when he tried to make excuses, gee, I'm not a racist, and here's why, those comments were worse than his original comments. So there's nothing positive coming out of this. It's just ugliness all the way down.
John, what do you think is the right way to approach this if you are the state Republican Party, which has called him to resign, or political opponents who have also called on him to resign? I mean, is that the right way to approach this? Is there maybe a better, more impactful way to handle this?
I think that is triage. That's the start. But then, too, I think it's an opportunity for various office holders, especially, to make speeches, to show up at MLK dinners, you know, to just go out there and, hey, this isn't who we are. If that isn't who they are, you know, go out there and say it. And I can understand wanting more secure borders and things like this, but when you make it just patently a racially based, you know, these racial purity arguments, suddenly like something out of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou or something, it's just like, what is going on? You know, is this crazy throwback? And yeah, there is a significant element on the right who believe this garbage, so it just has to be shut down immediately.
Chad, as I asked John, there have been a lot of calls for Representative Stringer to resign. I'm wondering, like, what difference does that make? The legislature is out of session now, probably not coming back into session before the end of the year. There's an election between now and then. Would his resignation, other than a symbolic thing, does that matter?
Well, I mean, at least he wouldn't be on the ballot in November. That would be a step in the right direction. You know, and if he's not going to resign, at the very least, withdraw from the race and just don't run for re-election and ride your term out. But I do think it matters that some type of action is taken. And you know, quite frankly, I mean, what concerns me more than anything is that if he stays on, he's probably going to get reelected in that district, to be blunt. He'll get through the primary, I'm sure, and he'll probably get reelected because of the numbers there. And that's really troubling to me. So, you know, resignation may not be the answer, but at the very least, don't run for reelection. Give the voters a better choice than what they have when they're looking at Stringer. I mean, it's a shame, but I think that's the case.
John, it's election season, but opponents, these are mostly Democrats saying this at this point, are saying, okay, Governor Ducey is calling on Stringer to resign now as well, but he also sought the endorsement of former Sheriff Ralph Pio. They were friends to some extent, or at least he talks as if they were. Granted, even though we're in a political season, does that have a valid point to some extent, considering some of the sheriff's views, especially later on, seem to also ride with racism? And of course, he was in court because of that.
Right. And I think the state GOP for Arizona here, Arpaio, is a black stain, and it will be for decades to come, I would think. It's just ugly. Anybody who's I used to commute through Guadalupe and see these sweeps going through, and it was hideous, you know, just seeing this all the time. So for the state party and so many leaders to embrace someone like Arpaio, you just need to completely condemn this and move on. There's no upside. There's no PR. There's no slick way to go about this and turn it on the Democrats or something other than, you know, a full medieval-sized repentance and just completely turning away and doing the right thing. This is common sense. It's just be a good human.
Well, and I would just add, I mean, again, I think this goes back to Trump. Trump is really just kind of the nationalized version of Arpaio, if you ask me. And Trump has empowered this sentiment out there. He's emboldened these people. And Trump has said a lot of things that were probably just as bad as what Stringer said, let's be honest. And during his campaign, I mean, it took him days to disavow the KKK and David Duke, what happened after the riots. I mean, you know, he's been horrible on these issues, and he's really either subtly or not so subtly empowered this kind of xenophobic bigotry out there, and that's where it's coming from, and we're seeing it all across the country.
Is there a sense that these comments, as offensive and racist and any other adjective you want to put on them, do either of you have a sense that there are some number of people in this state who would agree with what Representative Stringer had to say?
I think there has to be. And that's what's so troubling, too, is just what this, like the crowd when Stringer was making his comments being silent. I would expect any crowd of civilized adults of any political persuasion to catcall and boo, but everybody was just quiet and politely listening. And you just can't sit there. You know, if I'm with my kids and some fellow parent at a school event said something like that, let's just say it would be a teachable moment. And for someone just to let this kind of stuff stand, it's just appalling.
Chad, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think he'll get reelected if he stays on the ballot. I think the primary base voters will support him. And I think in that district, the Republican advantage is so strong that it'll be tough for a Democrat to beat him. And I think that overall, I think that the percentage of Arizonans, the percentage of Americans that support these views is relatively small. But honestly, they've become very active. They've become very loud. And to the point we've kind of been making here for the past few minutes, I think they've captured a significant portion of the GOP base and the GOP's elected officials.
And Chad, I don't want to put this on Speaker Mesnard, but there was an ad hoc committee related to prison reform and sentencing reform that was going to be led by Representative Stringer. They met once, and now it's been dissolved by Speaker Mesnard. There's no – obviously, we're not blaming Speaker Mesnard for David Stringer's comments in any way, but – should his colleagues know he has some of these views? Should the leaders of the party, at least in the caucus, know this and maybe not put him in any sort of prime role? Yes, he's elected. He was duly elected. His colleagues cannot remove him. I guess they could, but as they did with Don Shooter, but it's a little bit different. Yeah. Where do you think this lies?
I mean, it'd be tough to remove him for views. You can't really remove anybody for their views. They've been elected by their district and their voters, and I think it'd be tough to remove him. And it's tough to sit here and say that Speaker Mesnard knew what his views were on these issues. So I think that's a tough one to try to interject in. But I would say, though, I think that Speaker Mesnard's reaction to this is a little odd. Like, disbanding the committee, not going further than that, not coming out very quickly, very publicly, denouncing it, asking for resignation, much like Governor Ducey did or the Chamber of Commerce did, others. I do find that reaction a little odd. And Speaker Mesnard has handled a lot of tough situations very well over the past year and a half, and I think he missed this one, and I don't want to try to, you know, conjecture as to why that's the case.
Do either of you think there's any significance to the fact that the state Republican Party was the first entity to call for Stringer's resignation, followed by the governor, not the other way around? Does that matter at all?
I'm not sure if it does matter a lot. I'm sure that they coordinated. But I just think I was heartened to see that at least, although it was late. But just the concern, so many Republicans, you know, especially like the fiscal conservatives and things like that, are like, oh, my gosh, we aren't racist. Why do people throw this allegation at us? Well, if you don't want to be seen as tolerating racism, don't tolerate racism. You know, it's very simple. Get rid of this guy as best you can. Obviously, the voters have the final say, but you can definitely condemn these views.
John, before the break, I want to ask a follow-up about what Chad has said about President Trump. And you have been a frequent critic of his in your columns in The Republic. There's something, and this is going to be very touchy-feely public radio right now, but we all as individuals have our own choices to make, whether we catcall David Stringer or not, whether we say terrible things about people or not. I wonder that certainly President Trump has said many, many offensive things to about many people, but how much should we blame him for this? Again, was he the symptom or is he the result?
I think it's very complicated knowing, you know, kind of a chicken or egg question like that. I think his presence on the national stage has emboldened what he can call, well, I'm just politically incorrect. And other people would say, no, you're a jerk. You know, it's kind of, you know, I can understand not wanting to tiptoe around the perfect phrasing of various social issues or social groups or something like that. But obviously, he just shoots from the hip. He talks like a you know, an elderly, you know, some your older uncle at the Thanksgiving table, you know, you're just like, ooh, man, wow, where did that come from kind of a thing. And he's the guy just popping off leading the country. So it's I think he has emboldened that. And you just see it around the country. So that's why I think he's somehow involved with it.
Yeah, I would just say I'm not sure Donald Trump has any moral values at all. Honestly, I think he's the classical narcissist in the clinical sense of the word. I think all he cares about is himself and his power. So I think he's both the symptom and the cause. I think he captured and leveraged something that a lot of us didn't see happening kind of in the underbelly of America and turned those voters out. Now that he's in charge, like John was saying, he's actually emboldening them and actually making it worse.
That's Chad Campbell. Also here for the Friday Newscap is John Gabriel in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein, and the conversation continues after this. Good morning. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap here on the show on 91.5 KJZZ with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Joining us, former legislative leader Chad Campbell, Senior Vice President at Strategies 360, and John Gabriel, Editor-in-Chief of Ricochet.com and a contributor to the Arizona Republic.
So, guys, let's start this segment of the show with the Corporation Commission trial. Gary Pierce, former commissioner, among others, is on trial, allegations of bribery and other things. And, Chad, we'd heard sort of before the trial started that we might be hearing a little bit of the commission's dirty laundry being aired, the way things go down yeah. there. Have you been surprised by anything that you've heard so far in the testimony?
No, I don't think I've been surprised necessarily. You know, I think a lot of what's happened has confirmed some of the suspicions out there amongst many people about how the Corp Comm has been working and some of the things that have been going on behind the scenes. I think the bigger question for me, or what has surprised me actually, is the lack of a bigger picture actually from this still. So I, as many people believe, think that this whole case started because of a bigger investigation, and this was just something that the FBI kind of found and is now using for leverage. And there's been a couple mentions about some of the people we think may or may not be being investigated.
Yeah, there's been
some
evidence of that in filings from the FBI and others.
So I've been surprised at how that hasn't exploded yet, but there's still a long ways to go, and I think that's probably going to happen ultimately.
John, how big a deal do you think what this trial itself and sort of what we learn about the commission, what comes out in the midst of this trial is to the state?
It's really indicative of, as Chad was saying, what we all kind of thought was happening. And it's really something, too, that the right or left or people who aren't even that partisan can get behind in just sharing their disgust at how things are going on. You know, you see the collusion of well-connected politicians, their friends and family, their lobbyists, and big business. And it's just they're all in cahoots together, self-serving, basically using the customers of these various utilities. And it's just kind of the worst thoughts about, like, you think of the 2008 financial crisis with the bailouts. And it's like, yep, that's how they all operate. And anytime something like this goes on, you're just like, yeah, it's exactly like we thought. People get a little more cynical. It just looks a little more corrupt, a little more ugly. And I think everyone should be outraged, but this, it's not even a partisan issue. It's just abuse of power.
And Chad, corrupt is a good word. A lot of people are seeing this as very much a corruption trial. Let's look at it this way. We've also heard, based on the testimony of Mrs. Norton, the former Mrs. Norton, that Governor Ducey had floated the idea with Arizona Public Service, the utility that's been mentioned quite often here, about maybe dissolving the Corporation Commission. There's even been talk about making an appointed position, but actually dissolving it. Does corruption like this make something like that more or less likely, even if it's pie in the sky?
That's a tough one. I mean, I think it makes it a little harder in some respects. I'm not sure that people want less oversight of utilities. I think they want maybe different oversight. But the CorpCom, you know, we have one of the few elected corporation commissions in the country. And the original reason it was set up that way was because they actually didn't want that body to be appointed by the governor, because they were fearful that would be captured eventually and become a captured regulatory agency in terms of being unduly influenced by the groups they're supposed to be regulating, which has now happened anyways. But I don't think appointing it is the answer. I do think that there needs to be some type of campaign finance reform around a regulatory body, though. And entities that are being regulated by that body should not be able to influence the outcome of that election. I think that's the first step in trying to clean up this mess here in Arizona.
Yeah, John, is there a bigger picture corruption question here? Is this something that, are we more or less corrupt than we think we are, to some extent?
Yeah, I think we're just as corrupt as I thought we were, unfortunately, being a bit of a skeptic and cynic. But it makes it very difficult, because when you have politicians who are trying to get office and there's people, basically huge corporations with a whole bunch of money who can pump it into various elections, you're just going to have shenanigans, go on. And that's what we're seeing here. And that's why everybody kind of instinctively thought, yeah, there's probably some backroom deals, some dinners between these people when no one's around, when there's no cameras, they're going to talk. And it is tricky because, in one sense, yeah, let's just get rid of this commission because they're obviously going to be corrupt. Or do you even strengthen the regulations on them? Create a corporation commission to watch them. It's like, how far do you go? But, it's just the entire situation is pretty ugly, and I think it has been for years.
Well, Chad, that kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier, and I'm wondering if you think that maybe there could be special campaign finance rules just for commissioners that maybe don't apply to other elected officials. I mean, is there a way, do you think, to sort of clean this up?
There has to be. I mean, I'm not a campaign finance attorney. That is not my professional background. But there's got to be a way to ensure that, at the very least, there's full transparency in how the money's flowing to influence this particular election. But, I mean, ideally, I think there's a way you would have to set some type of structure up or some type of process up that, again, if you're a regulated body, you cannot influence the outcome of this election. Now, again, I'm not sure if there's any constitutional issues with that because I'm not a campaign finance attorney. But, you know, that's the way you fix this. I don't think appointing that body is going to be the fix. Definitely abolishing and handing it to the legislature. God, please don't do that. That's definitely not the fix. You know, figure out some way to put a wall, though, between those who are regulated and the regulators themselves. There's not a financial connection there. That's the answer in my eyes.
Well, and we should point out that the governor has denied having the conversation or wanting to do anything about getting rid of the Corporation Commission or making it appointed or anything like that. John, do you think that there's, like, do you think that this is something that might be on the agenda at some point down the road?
I think it definitely could be, but it's something where you need to win the public over, because you don't want this to look like, for any politician of either party who would recommend such a solution, it can't look like, oh, now they're really going to be in bed with the corporations. It's something that would really have to be sold on a popular level. But it really, like the campaign finance law part of it, is it just needs to be really investigated to make sure that we don't do reforms that make the situation even worse, or in 10 years they find a way to game that system and work around it as well.
Gentlemen, our last final minutes, a few minutes here, I want to move on to the superintendent of public instruction position. We have an incumbent there, Diane Douglas. And according to the latest polling, GOP voters are really not that supportive of her. About two-thirds of this latest poll say they are not sure or they're not going to vote for her. So an incumbent in her own party is seeing like 15% support. John, what does that say to you about Diane Douglas?
I think she's always been weak. She's kind of put her foot in her mouth about a few things, has not made any friends around the Capitol. And she's been a concern to many Republicans from the start. She was very much an outsider. She didn't have, well, much experience, I'll just say politely. And now there's four people running against her on the Republican side alone. So all the indications is that she might not be long for this political world, but nobody else is really gathering a lot of steam either.
Do you think she wins the primary?
I don't think she does. I think someone will people will gel around someone else and they'll get in there. It's going to be very tricky for Republicans, especially considering Red for Ed and all the activism that's been going on. It's going to be very difficult with Diane Douglas as the incumbent for Republicans to hold on to it. They're going to have to be very shrewd about how they play it.
Chad, has she been bad or just ineffectual?
I think both. And speaking of positions that should be appointed, this should be an appointed position. It's ludicrous that we elect the superintendent of public instruction in this day and age. The governor runs on education these days. Legislative candidates run on education. This is an archaic way to put somebody in charge of the Department of Education, along with treasurer, along with mine inspector. Eliminate them. I'm Mr. Small Government today. And we will save a lot of money and a lot of bureaucratic red tape. But I, to that point, I think she's been both bad and ineffectual. But here's my concern. I mean, from the general election, if she gets out of the primary in the general election, people don't pay attention to this race either. That's the thing. We saw this last time when David Garcia ran. He had the support of the Chambers of Commerce, the business community. He still lost because people don't know about this position, and they vote in just a partisan fallback position, and that's why I think she'll win if she does get to the primary.
Do you think she will get that far?
I don't know, because to John's point, there's so many people on the Republican primary side that I have no idea. And David Shapiro is a very good candidate on the Democratic side, and he has a shot. I'm just saying, if she wins, that's why she wins, because nobody's paying attention. That's how I should phrase that.
Well, and to the point of the poll, I mean, even 15% in a crowded primary, in some cases, not much more than that could be enough to get you through.
Yep.
And let's close out. I wanted to ask, in terms of Shapiro, is he as good a candidate as Garcia was? I mean, a lot of people gave Garcia a lot of credit for having some of the experience he had, not as an elected official. Is Shapiro going to be seen as someone who's just sort of wanting to get back into government?
Shapiro's a great candidate. Education is his passion. Him and I served together. That was his number one issue all of the time. He worked very hard around education issues. And I will say this, he's one of the hardest working politicians and elected officials in the state. He really is, truly. Regardless of Dem or Republican, he is somebody that works very, very hard, and so you cannot underestimate him. He may not have the support, the cross-aisle support in terms of established organizations like Garcia did, but he will outwork many candidates in this state.
John, finally, we know that you're a small government guy, much like Chad is today. So do you agree with what he's saying? Is that one of the positions that could easily be eliminated?
Yeah, well, just compare it to should we have a national election for someone running the Department of Education on the national level. It's the same thing. Once you can have the executive pick the role, you can have advice and consent from the state house. And it just makes more sense with a new executive coming in of either party, they can nominate their own team.
That's John Gabriel, editor-in-chief of Ricochet.com, also a contributor to the Arizona Republic, also here with us. Former legislative leader Chad Campbell, senior vice president at Strategies 360. Guys, thanks as always.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at the show@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.